This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
What's up, everyone? Pato here. We are done with the Laguna Seca test. Last test that we can do before we go racing at Barber. Well, at least the last road course test. I think we have an open test in IMS close to the Barber date. But we're ready, man. We crossed off a lot of things off the checklist. Saw what worked, what didn't work, what might work somewhere else. But it was a good day. We put down some solid runs. And, man, it just makes us want to go racing already. I'm excited to get this year started in Barber Motorsports Park. Can't wait to see you guys there.
Hello and welcome. It's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis and thereabout in central Indiana. Thanks for joining us tonight. That's Pato Award, courtesy of the Arrow McLaren SP social media channels. Yesterday, after he was on the track at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, that's part of the conversation tonight on the program. Testing last week, this week, next week. It's March. It should be race month for IndyCar, but not quite. We have to be a little more patient, but we do have content. We have content. We have cars on track. We have news. We have rumors. We have things to discuss. We literally have content day coming up later on this week with all of the IndyCar drivers in Indianapolis on Thursday and Friday doing the pictures, asking questions from people like me and Marty Snyder that we'll put together and put in the archives that might not see the light of day until August, and promos, and they will be doing some media sessions via Zoom with journalists as well. So you'll see and hear from drivers and learn what they've been doing in the off season coming up later on this week. Welcome to the show. If I didn't introduce myself, my name is Kevin Lee. Brad Huber is in our Indianapolis studios, the drivehuber.com studios at the MS Communications Worldwide Headquarters. Kurt Cavan will be along in just a few minutes as well. We have open room for your Twitter questions tonight at KevinLee23, at Kurt Cavan. I've just got a lot of nuggets, and some I've had for a couple of weeks that I'm going to just kind of roll through those and some things I've wanted to talk about. And we'll get into a couple of debatable topics as well. Kurt's written a couple of things this week. I've seen some journalism by others that we'll discuss on the program, but we're just going to kind of see where it goes. Maybe we're all in a better mood now. Weather is nicer, at least here in Indianapolis. It was not horribly warm today, but when it was sunny and 44, 45 degrees, felt good. We had a great weekend with pushing plus 60 degrees, and I think it's supposed to be almost 60 again tomorrow. So it makes us think about the opportunity to see race cars even here on track. And maybe I'm just in a better mood today because, you know, we see the news that we're getting a little lower as far as vaccinations are concerned, 55 plus in Indiana. So yes, I understand my home state sometimes is a little lacking in some areas, and maybe that's a joke that's not fair, and it is unfair, but that's kind of the perception nationwide. But they seem to be doing this pretty well, and things are moving along quite smoothly, and it was announced today that 55 plus can sign up, and it sounds like they can get them as soon as this weekend, and some at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It was announced today that there's going to be drive-up vaccines available at IMS, and I think in some cases people just signed up for that today. So do a little Google search. I'm going to guess those appointments went pretty quickly, but it's still a good sign. You know, I think it was just a week or so ago that they announced that 60-plus could start making reservations to get vaccinated sometime soon. I know my mom is getting her second early next week, and she wasn't – we didn't sign her up the moment it opened up, so I think – quite a few people are already to that point. So that's positive. I think that's real positive. Also, for those around the country, you know, we're all wondering, all right, what's it going to be like for the 500? And we talked to Doug Bowles, was that last week? I think it was last week, the IMS president. And I like the plan. I know we all want to know, but hey, let's wait as long as possible, because if you must make a decision right now, well, it's got to be at the limitations that there are right now. But that may change. Certainly monthly, maybe even weekly. And just last week it was announced in Marion County that starting March 1st, which was yesterday, that restrictions were relaxed a little bit. Works out nicely for the NCAA tournament, which is all here in Indianapolis. I think bars are up to 50% capacity and restaurants 75%. So that's good. Now, we did get, you know, I think negative news, but I understand that the mini marathon is going to be virtual this year. That's the first Saturday in May. And I know a lot of people would say, well, wait a minute, this is an outdoor event. It's still 2 months away. And I haven't asked anyone involved or that would have information on this, but here would be simply my thought. Just from a public health and safety standpoint, it's a mass of people gathered together. So yes, I understand it's outside, but it'd be pretty difficult to guarantee 6 feet apart for a lot of people. I'm telling you, for the first mile, you are just basically huddled in a mass of people. And more of the concern is just standing at the start line, that everyone is gathered up there. It's 30 to 35,000 people gathered up there all together. And that's probably not the best idea from a health and safety standpoint in many eyes. I understand there's no exact science on this. It's just opinions and doing what we think is best there. And then I think also, I think you would take into consideration that I don't know what the demographics are, and they do have people of all ages, but a pretty high percentage of the people doing this, you know, are maybe under the age of 40, and they are not likely to have had their shot yet by the time we get to early May. So, you know, I feel great about the 55 plus numbers, and now I think we're to a point where in Indiana, at least, most of the people 65 or 70 plus at least have had one shot. And the next group is getting it very, very soon. It's going to be in March. And that's the group that is most vulnerable. That's the group that is dying. That's what the numbers say. This is not going to guarantee that we don't get sick to some extent, but it'll just be getting sick. That's the idea, that these percentages are preventing death. So that's what we're looking at. Or I guess I should say the percentages, like the new Johnson & Johnson is 74% or whatever. You still might get it, but they do believe that it's much, much, much more unlikely for you to die of this. So, you know, I know this is a different type of topic, but it applies. In my mind, this applies. We want to know, can you run the Indy 500 with a certain amount of people? And I am growing more and more optimistic about that because of the way things are going, and especially here in Indiana from that standpoint. You know, and I guess the other thing I would say about the mini, and they are going to do it, by the way, so look it up. You can still run through your neighborhood or maybe your favorite path, or, you know, I'm sure a few people can sort of run some of the mini path. You'd have some traffic to deal with. But think of it this way, from the Indy 500 standpoint, you don't want anything to go wrong, meaning that this happens in early May and 2 weeks later there's an outbreak in Indianapolis. And I think, honestly, some of it's the visual too. If someone, you know, Jalopnik wrote something very derogatory about Indianapolis even planning to have fans for the 500, most of us know that was a hit shot and it wasn't fair. But if a major media outlet wants to take a picture of, even if it's less people, 10 or 15,000 people running this event, and that might not be financially viable to do that. Maybe you need these big numbers. But if somebody takes a picture from the right angle and sees a mass of people in Indianapolis and then attaches that to the 500 with the 500 Festival Committee, that's probably not the attention that you want. You want to buy more time 3 weeks later for the Indy 500, or maybe it was even 4 weeks, and that's the critical event. So it stinks. I was planning on running it this year again, so I'll do some running on my own. And we'll move forward on that. Also, we got news that the Rev event, the big outdoor food and music gathering that is the night of the mini marathon, they're still going to have that this year. That's going to be on Saturday, July 31st. And that benefits many charities and is a big to-do here in Indianapolis. And that somewhat coincides with our second big weekend of the year at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Brickyard Weekend, which includes IndyCar again this year. For those that have forgotten, August 14th and 15th, everything on the road course, IndyCar, and then the NASCAR Xfinity Series following the IndyCar race on the Saturday, and then the Cup race on the road course. The Brickyard will be on the Sunday, so Rev can kind of kick off that event, and we like that because IndyCar is also going to be associated with that. Now, on the negative front, a few people have sent me the notice of what's going on in Toronto as far as we look at the IndyCar schedule, and that's been the one that we've all had the most concern about, especially since I'm pretty confident, optimistic about St. Pete. I can't see anything changing, and I know people have asked when are tickets going to go on sale. I saw Robin Miller wrote in the mailbag, early next month, last week. So it is now early the next month. So I just stand by. We are, what, 5-6 weeks out from that? And again, they want to wait as long as they can. The longer you wait, the better things look. So you got a better chance. But they had some fans last October, and things are trending in the right direction. So I'm very optimistic that we're going to be able to see fans at St. Pete and Barber, and we should get some new information soon. Toronto is another story, though. The city has announced that all outdoor events and parades are canceled until July 1st. So there's still a chance, but that's July 11th, and you need to have some lead time for that. So I hope for the best, and I do not know what the backup plans are, if they're looking at adding a doubleheader to maybe one of the other Green Savory-promoted events, or pushing the date back. But apparently Canada is not doing as well as we are as far as giving out shots. I think I saw that their 60-plus group, which started making appointments at least in Indiana next week, and I know it's going well in some other states as well, but they are not expected to start vaccinations for the 60-plus group until July 1st. So that's a big deal in my mind. This is the age group that is the most vulnerable. So I'm not horribly optimistic about that event. I hope I'm wrong. And the good thing is you don't have to decide right now. I'm sure they're making backup plans, but you don't have to decide right now. And you can wait until at least the beginning of May, I would think, to do anything like that. I think you've got until mid-May before a track build begins or anything along those lines. We're getting some other notes about NASCAR already planning at like 30% attendance for Virginia, for Richmond. They've already sort of announced, I think, 30% for the Coca-Cola 600 or the Coke 600 at Charlotte Indy 500 night. So I'm still hoping for more than that for the Indy 500, but maybe that's a minimum. I would think you have the ability to expand that. So that may just be the point that, all right, we know we can have at least this much, so we'll sell tickets till we get to that point. We'll put them on hold, and then if things look better, we'll put them back on sale. And I think I did hear that tickets remain on sale for the 500. It's just not being promoted at this point, and there obviously is the chance that they have to make some changes. So just stand by on that, and that's where we are. Okay, enough virus talk. Let's talk racing. And WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca yesterday. It was good to see some content from Marshall Pruitt from Racer.com out there shooting some videos and doing some different things. You know, we'd all love to have the budget to be able to do that, but I would love for, you know, some of us in IndyCar had somebody out doing some good things at Barber last week as well, but you'd love to just kind of have like a pool reporter at every event that can do some digital media as well. Just let us see some race cars. And I thought that was a fantastic idea where Marshall did just kind of a mini grid walk. I used to do something like that we did for the IndyCar Verizon app that I would post, that I would record right before the first practice usually started, like 10 minutes before it started, when drivers were walking out, when cars were being pulled on the pit lane. And I don't know how many people saw it. I don't think it was really ever promoted. But I always thought, now I'm biased because it was what I was doing, but I always thought that was kind of cool just to see behind the scenes, very informal, just walking along and doing a show and tell with type of things. And that idea has been floated around to do some more things like that on digital channels as we move forward. But so the most notable thing was, and this was why it was good to have Marshall there, they apparently didn't have any fuel for the cars yesterday morning. So sometimes things are not as well organized, and I feel pretty certain that's not an IndyCar thing, that comes from somewhere else. But those types of things happen at tests, and we normally don't really know much about it. I was at a test recently where they couldn't get tires mounted, and that had nothing to do with the teams. It was just up to the track. And the guy that was mounting the tires was taking his break. So there wasn't any ability to put new tires on race cars for a while because of that. So I think they kind of pooled what they all had together on the transporters and rationed it out and divided it up amongst the teams so they could go out there and at least run a little bit in the morning. Otherwise, they would have been sitting there until past noon, but did make use of the time, and then the fuel truck did show up, and they got going in the afternoon. And, well, it looks like the eight cars that were there all did somewhere between like 75 and a little over 100 laps or so. We know everybody's on a different program. It depends on when you do your new tire run, how the track is, and so forth. So the times don't tell everything, but you'd still rather be fast than slow. So that's why when the times were released, we talk about them a little bit. And Pato Award from Arrow McLaren SP, who we heard from to start the program tonight, was the fastest by about 0.3 on Ed Jones from Dale Coyne Racing with Vassar Sullivan. I think this is notable that a guy that's brand new, and we wonder how he's going to get acclimated to IndyCar. Yes, very, very, very high-level Formula car experience as a Formula One driver who's nearly won several times. Romain Grosjean, and I'll say it three different times as we move forward, was third quick and was P1 for a little while in the early afternoon. So that's, I think, very significant. And Grosjean was just a few hundredths behind Ed Jones. Felix Rosenquist, the other Arrow McLaren SP driver, was fourth. Then Jack Harvey. And they were all separated by 0.4 of a second. We're talking 71, 72-second laps at Laguna Seca. Rinus VK was next, only a half second back. And then, you know, it shouldn't be totally surprising that the two guys that haven't done a lot of this in a while, we're near the bottom. Juan Pablo Montoya was next, 0.9 off the top speed with Arrow McLaren SP. And I'll get back to that. I have a built-in excuse for him at this point. And then Elio Castroneves at a second and a half behind. Do you worry about that a little bit, that he's 0.6 of a second slower than anyone else and 1.5 off? So my commentary there would be, one, we don't know what they were doing. He is not a full-time driver, so it's possible that he's the guinea pig that they're trying some things out on, because his first race is not till the Indianapolis 500, as things stand currently. I know Elio is hoping to talk them into doing the GP or something else ahead of that. But I think that's very possible. Now, he is running Laguna Seca, so learning some things there. That's point one. Point two is another fascinating aspect of this season is how does Elio acclimate to driving a non-Penske car? Now, we all believe that Elio is a world-class driver. He was good before he got in the Penske car when he was young, back in the 90s. And you don't stick in a Penske car with other high-level talent, the best available, unless you're really, really good. He had to match up, and they came and went, and he was the one that remained standing. Go through all the teammates that he had in 20 years with Team Penske and almost 20 as a full-time driver. So there's no doubt about Elio's talent. But there's one, being out of the car for a little while. He had the one-off situation where it didn't go particularly well, as expected, at the end of the year last year, filling in for Askew in the Arrow McLaren SP car. But Penske does things a certain way. And how hard is that adjustment when it's been done that way? And the infrastructure of the team is a certain way, and now you're trying to learn things a different way. Will he figure it out? Yes, he will, but he doesn't have a lot of time. When you have six races, and not all of them are road course races, that's going to be really challenging. So, one, I'm really glad Elio got a chance to run on the road course just to get a little feel of things. Now, bottom line is, I suspect it was a little bit of combination of the two. He's getting acclimated to them. He's trying some things for the team and so on and so forth. But he just hasn't been doing a lot of IndyCar racing on road courses for the last few years. So it's going to take a little bit. The sports car driving helps, but it's not the same. Now to Montoya, 9/10 off the pace, but he really did seem to be the guy that is doing a lot of testing for the team. So you saw Marshall post the picture of the big screen on the front of the car. And I don't know how you describe that, but I've seen it before. And I don't know if I've seen it in an Indy car or if I'm just thinking of Formula One. I recognize the device on there, and it's a way to basically detect airflow that they'll run in test sessions. So I've seen it before. I just can't recall if I've only seen it in Formula One or if we've seen it in IndyCar. And this is a team with the Formula One partnership, so maybe it is more of a Formula One type of thing. But Montoya was doing that, so obviously you're not running full go with what basically looks like something you would attach your Christmas lights to and put on the front door or the front of the house. That's kind of what it looked like on both sides of the front of the car. So that's to learn something. And I suspect he still might have been doing some of that since, again, he's not the full-time driver. Now, I've been hearing that there's a decent chance that we might see him at the road course race in mid-May in Indianapolis. So that would help prepare him from that. But a lot of it's, hey, you got a guy that's a champion and as good as anybody to help a couple of still relatively young drivers in Rosenquist and Award. Really good, really talented, and somewhat experienced drivers. But, you know, we're talking 2-3 years into the program. So you got an extra driver, you got more resources. Let's go ahead and do it. It serves a lot of things. So I wouldn't worry at all about where Montoya is at. In fact, in many ways, I would think being just 9/10 off after not driving an Indy car in what, almost 4 years on a road course? I think TrackSideOnline.com looked this up. Yeah, May of 2017, 1,347 days between road course outings in an Indy car. Not too shabby, especially if it was only really about a half day of work as he was testing some aero things in the early part of the day. What was also notable with Montoya is that he was in the car number 66, and it was said that that's not going to be his livery for May. And apparently it's not even going to be the number. Several have reported that it's going to be 86 that he will be using, and TSO notes and reminds us that's the number for the pole sitting car in 1971 from McLaren with Peter Revson. And he finished second that year behind Al Unser. And I saw David Land, DLand91 on Twitter, mentioned that that was a Gulf McLaren livery. And I do remember over the winter seeing that Gulf is a partner with at least McLaren in the F1 world. So that might be sort of the thought there as well. So maybe Gulf is going to be part of this entry too. So some fascinating things on that front. Now back to the top. How much do we read in Pato Award? I think that's going to be a good one. And later on, I may get to some Sam Schmidt comments that David Malcher-Lopez had in Motorsport a few days ago about what Sam is expecting this season. But is Pato ready to take that next big leap this year? And is Arrow McLaren SP ready to do that as well? They have the budget behind them. That's where you start. Money buys speed. And they have money. They had good partners already with Aero. Then you add in McLaren. You add in the year of experience with Pato. You bring Rosenquist over, who has experience with a different team. And now he gets the chance here in McLaren. Having Montoya doesn't hurt. You remember what Craig Hampson was saying last year? I forget what his exact title is. It's not exactly technical director, but he's not on a particular car. He can help in the engineering aspect, and he was saying last year that give us a little time here. Yes, I think we can see things get better this year, but we're all still getting together. We're using the resources that the McLaren F1 group can provide, comparing notes. When you're really possibly going to see the fruits of our work is in 2021. Well, here we are, and there they are at the top with one of their cars in a test day. You know, it's one test day, but it's still something of note. Made me also think, I think at the very end of the show last week, I mentioned that TSO had some no-tow times from the test at Barber, which I think were notable to take a look at as well. So we had promoted what the times were, but there were some not no-toe times, but non-push to pass times, which is even bigger than the no-toe. But it was available, and that's part of it. We don't know what people are doing. Who's on new tires? Who's using push to pass? And this could have also applied to these Laguna Seca times as well. But Sebastian Bourdais was fastest overall, followed by Ray Hall, Rinus VK, Will Power, Connor Daly. Everything was pretty tight. I think what Grosjean was still only 8 tenths of a back, 8 tenths of a second back, 12 drivers separated by 8 tenths of a second. And then the, those are the no push to pass numbers. So Bourdais was fastest without push to pass, and Rinus VK was fastest overall. So I did want to go back to that too, because I think when we were talking about, you know, the next group of stars, I think I omitted Rinus VK, but that should not have been the case. Rinus is in that group of next stars to keep an eye on, and that's one of the topics I think when Kurt joins us we may get into, who's going to be the next first-time winner, and you probably start with a Pato award, and maybe you go next to Rinus VK, but we'll get into that a little bit later on. But I think it's notable that Bourdais, without that, that's the truest test. No push to pass. Foyt and Sebastian Bourdais were the quickest. Graham Rahal was the second. VK was still up there third. Power, Connor Daly. So that's two Ed Carpenter Racing cars right up there as well. So just wanted to touch on that just a little bit. And again, everybody was really close at that point, which is the way it always is in IndyCar. We've seen some new cars. We'll talk on the Aero McLaren cars and what we saw of those in their Formula One style launch, which we like. We'll maybe get into some thoughts on Aero McLaren and plenty more news and notes from around the weekend and from what we're going to see in the next few weeks, plus your Twitter comments as well coming up. At Kevin Lee 23, it's Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter-Reay, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
We are inside 90 days of the 105th Indianapolis 500. More testing coming up throughout the month. The season starts in, 5 weeks or so, and plenty of things to talk about. Thanks for staying with us on Trackside, Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan will be along in just a few minutes. We were talking about recent testing. I should have mentioned what else is coming up. There's more coming up next Monday. Back to Barber Motorsports Park. The last list I saw just has the four Ganassi cars there. So another chance for Jimmy Johnson. And then, and I think maybe Pato mentioned that in the soundbite he played, or I heard someone else saying that as well in a social media post, that there's not a whole lot going on for a little while. There's the test April 8th and 9th at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the Oval. So people have asked about that. 8th and 9th at IMS. Stand by for what's permitted, advised. You know, normally it's open if you want to gather at the south end. But I think it's also possible that they might say, you know, can you not really do that? I don't know. I'll leave that up to the other people. I would think it would be fine. Because I don't think you're going to see a mass of people creating any kind of health scare or publicity issue. But you never know. Smarter people are looking into that. So I can't guarantee that that's going to be the case. I think they've done that here since the pandemic started and kind of closed off the grounds. But that's kind of the plan for there. So we'll kind of see if there's any kind of media coverage, internet or otherwise, available for that. So that is TBD at this point. And then I think there are a couple of other tests as well planned for later this month that are a little bit up in the air, possibly at IMS. I don't know if that's road course or oval. And then I think there's a test coming up at Texas at the end of March as well with several teams. So there's still a lot of activity before things get going in April. What else? Oh, you know, before I get into some other items, hey, let's talk about who might be driving in the Indy 500 that we don't know about. So we've had some news on that front from over the weekend. So Santino Ferrucci made his NASCAR debut this weekend and talked with the media leading up to that event at Homestead and said, yeah, the 500 is still very much on the radar. He's focused on NASCAR, especially this first stretch. He's doing something like four or five races
in a row, but he said still a good chance of putting something together for the 500, and he's open to all of the ovals. Now, there are only two other weekends, the Texas doubleheader and then Gateway in August. So you're thinking, all right, is he going back to the Vassar Sullivan group or going to Dale Coyne Racing? Because it's up in the air with those cars right now. And then I also remember seeing a report somewhere that I assumed would get verified somewhere else. It was one of those translated reports, and I'm sure Indy 44 is the one who found it for us. But there was a report about Pietro Fittipaldi, or am I dreaming that? Because I couldn't find it in my notes. Maybe I did a screen grab for the ovals with the Dale Coyne with Rick Ware Racing entry, filling in for Grosjean, which is essentially what he did at the end of the Formula One season last year. And that would make some sense. He's had that link with Coyne before, and that wouldn't surprise us. So if that's the case, then I'm not sure that there is the opportunity for Santino, unless it's with another team. Could it be the Carlin team? Carlin still has need of a driver for the two oval weekends, and I would think they could put together a package for a second car for the Indianapolis 500. A lot of us believe that. And then it goes along with James Davison, who posted something on Instagram, was it maybe a week and a half or so ago, that he's going to be running in the Indy 500. And I think Nathan Brown of the Indy Star got it confirmed somewhere that it's not going to be in the Grosjean car, not in the 51. So maybe it's in the third car, the 52, which originally was thought to be, I know this is getting confusing, and it is. It is confusing, and I think it's fluid, as we like to say. But that was planned for Cody Ware, but I'm not sure if Cody is going to be, I'm not sure if that plan is continuing at this point. Could be from a variety of reasons. Could be they've decided we should probably focus on NASCAR, or there's not going to be enough testing. And then I think I saw that he is switching where he earns points from Cup to Xfinity. So the original thought was he was going to run at least the Detroit IndyCar weekend because there wasn't a points-paying Cup race that weekend. Well, there is an Xfinity points-paying race. If he's trying to run for Xfinity points, then he's probably going to want to be at that race at Texas. So you might cross off Detroit. So maybe the Cody Ware plan, and believe me, this is just me talking. I don't have a source on this one at all. But I'm wondering if that's being shelved, and that could add into how there could be room for James Davison and Pietro Fittipaldi. And then where does that leave Ferrucci? Maybe he's still in there. Maybe Davison is going somewhere else. Who knows? I don't know that there's a lock. I think we all just kind of assume that he's headed back to Dale Coyne Racing because there's already a relationship with Rick Ware, and he's driving one of Rick Ware's cars in the Cup Series most weekends. By the way, if you didn't watch the Xfinity race, Santino Ferrucci did a really good job to start the race. That's so fascinating. R.C. Enerson did the same thing last year. Had never driven a stock car, and your first laps are in a race. And I can't remember if R.C. had done a late model test or anything, but I don't think he really had. I think he had driven some heavier sports cars, but that was it. And it kind of shows you the skill level of road course racers. That RC in that race at Road America raced his way up to like 10th, and they got taken out in somebody else's mess. And Santino had done a late model test, which I am told was impressive, but he had not driven this Xfinity car. There's no practice. There's no qualifying. Get in and go. And you know Santino is going to go, but then the risk of that is, you know, we like to say checkers or wreckers, and that's always a possibility. So he picked up several spots early, got up to 18th, and then he brushed the wall and damaged the car, but pretty much drove all the laps, so a good learning experience for him. And then I also have to note for this, you know, I've mentioned this before, I have more excitement about the Xfinity races. One, that race was actually good. I dozed off twice during the Cup race on Sunday. Maybe I was just sleepy, but I did not find much to hold my interest in the Cup race. But the Xfinity race, not just because I know some of the kids driving and some of the non-kids like A.J. Allmendinger, but I just thought the racing was better. They had a good package for that race, as they like to say. And my buddy Marty Snyder's kid, Myatt, who's not a kid anymore, he's 26, and has really been working at this, but I've known Myatt since he was I don't know, 13, 14 years old, driving Bandoleros and Legends. He got his first Xfinity win, so really cool for him in that circumstance. So happy on that front. And then I'll give out one other NASCAR note, because I think it's, you know, it's just kind of a general motorsport topic. If you watch the race after Noah Gregson, and there's obviously always something that goes your way to get a win. Noah Gregson dominated that race. And he was up by 9 seconds with a few laps to go, and he hits someone from behind. And David Starr, who was still on the lead lap, running, I think, 12th, had a tire failure, slid up the track, and Gregson runs into the back of him. And then when he's interviewed, he says, "What are you going to do? You got dip blank in the way." He didn't use blank every single week. And my thought was, I'm not sure that's totally fair. One, I want to see these guys in great equipment that have been well-funded their whole career. I want to see them drive these cars, because as I learn and know more people that kind of give me the idea of what the funding levels are like and what the budgets are like, you think there's a disparity in IndyCar between the team running the, you know, $4 or $5 million budget and the top teams with $7 or $8 or $9 million. Wait till you get a load, if you ever did, of what NASCAR budgets you're talking about. You know, I've heard that some of these cup teams that run in the 30s every single week, they're not starting park, but they know they're not doing any better than 35th if everybody finishes the race. They're doing it on a few million, and the teams that win are doing it on still, I think, $20 to $30 million budgets. So you're talking 4, 5, 6 times the level, and I'm sure it's the same kind of thing in Xfinity. So before you pound on these guys for having no talent, why don't you get in their car a little bit and see how it handles, see how it goes, and see how you're a full second slower than you were. You can put pretty good race car drivers in these back-of-the-pack Xfinity and Cup cars, and they're just not going to do anything with it at all. And Carl Long, who is the team owner, responded with some pretty poignant quotes on Facebook. He said, "Well, this over-entitled mouthpiece did not have enough talent to miss our wreck. We were happy to take on the top 12 finish that rolled right out of our hands, just like the rubber rolled off of his tire. There are not many people left in the garage who've worked as hard and sacrificed as much as myself to get to this level. Statements like this could and usually do come back and cost him." Now, I'll admit, I wondered that too. You got a 9-second lead. Could you have done something to avoid that car? Just kind of drive defensively? You know you're lapping someone. You know that they might do something unexpected. So there you go. And then from the previous week's Xfinity race, we never got into that. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Joe Gibbs' grandson, Ty Gibbs, drew the ire of people by talking about Daytona not being a real racetrack or something like that. And I know what he's talking about. He just simply meant there's a lot of luck involved when you run a Daytona. He was looking forward to something else. Well, he ran his first road course race, and that was after an ARCA race, by the way, and won in the Xfinity Series on the road course at Daytona. And he's, I think, the sixth guy that's driver that's won in the Xfinity debut, but the first that hadn't previously raced in Cup. He's just 18 years old, and really cool story. And I know the kid has road course experience, because I remember seeing him the only year that Jackson ran the Daytona Kart Week event there, kind of inside turn 4. And I know I probably told this story 5, 6 years ago, but this was my Joe Gibbs run-in from the weekend. Coach was there, as they call him. Coach was there watching his grandson, who would have been about 13 or so at the time. He's the same age as Jackson. And he apparently had gotten into it with someone racing out of our tent. We were racing with another team that weekend with about 8 or 9 other carts. And I remember Jackson and I were the only ones in this big tent. And Coach Joe comes glaring in, and he's staring at us trying to figure it, because he obviously saw the cart that crashed his grandson, or crashed with his grandson, I don't know whose fault it was, get rolled back into our tent, and he's looking to see if it's us. And then I think he eventually decides it's not, and it's somebody else, and they're not here. But yeah, Coach Joe looked like he had some words to say, and then I don't think he ever came back. So he probably cooled down a little bit after that and moved forward. But the point was that this kid is not brand new, that he had some road racing experience, And that applies. I got to wonder, with the way racing is going in stock cars, that you're not going to see more opportunities for kids that come through the road racing ranks, because, you know, they're getting to the point where about a sixth or seventh of the races are on road courses, and those that know how to do it have a huge advantage on that point. Hey, Connor Daly's going to run the truck race coming up on Friday night, so there's a reason to peek at that if you need a reason to watch. He's going to be in the number 44 truck for Nice Motorsports. He drove for them at Vegas last year and I think finished 18th, so good for Connor. All right, I've got a lot more to get to. Another series for Andretti Autosport to enter. We've got details on that, and we might see more of Marco Andretti. We have Ferrari news to get to, and Kurt will be along in just a moment, too, and we'll get to your tweets, too, coming up at KevinLee23 at Kurt Cavan on Trackside.
I'm Tony Kanaan, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
And you are listening live to Trackside tonight. Thanks for joining us. Apologies for the audio in the last segment. I unplugged the microphone cord here, so that was just running through the computer. So hopefully it sounds a little better now. And I can't blame that on Brad because, again, full disclosure, the last couple of segments were taped, so I could go watch Jackson's rec basketball game tonight. And, well, there's been news since I taped that this afternoon. You know, I started the show talking about how I was in a better mood about some health-related news, and we've got even more good news that we'll talk about coming up in the next hour. I mentioned that I had seen something about Pietro Fittipaldi, and Matt, Indy 44, is right on it. It was Planet F1 that had the report that no one else has picked up yet. I think that was maybe like Saturday, so I kind of expected someone else to pick that up by now. But the story says that Fittipaldi will fill in for Romain Grosjean on the oval races in IndyCar. So we'll stand by on that. We welcome Kurt to the program. Hello, how are you?
Good to see you. Literally, we FaceTime while we do this remotely and virtually. So good to see you.
So a couple of notes that I mentioned before we get into some other news items in the next hour. I mentioned that I think we should name the series the motorsport series that Andretti Autosport does not participate in. It's NASCAR, right? That's it. And there were rumors 3 or 4 years ago about that, but that's pretty much it. And that's the list.
NHRA and Formula One.
Okay, there you go. All right, we got three going now. So the latest is, as we've talked about, Marco Andretti tested an LMP3 car, and he made mention in a story. I think Mark Robinson wrote the story for the IMSA news wire service, for IMSA.com. A few days ago, that Marco said, yeah, the team is thinking about maybe entering in the WeatherTech series. So the LMP3 cars can run in Prototype Challenge, and this year they can also run in the big series. And, you know, the cars that race in the Rolex 24, they've added a fifth class LMP3. So that could be Marco and Jarrett, and potentially Jarrett's current teammate as well, because you could have three drivers if you choose in these longer races. Marco says they're talking about Watkins Glen is a 6-hour race. You could potentially have three, but actually he mentioned Road America as well. And Road America, I think, is just a standard length race. So that would just be a two-driver event. But this would be with Andretti Autosport. And Michael recently was quoted in a Marshall Pruitt Racer.com story that they're looking to IMSA in 2023 in the new LMDH category.
Well, one of the things I thought was moving was that Marco got the invitation from his cousin Jarrett, who said, if I can't race with my dad, John, then I'd like to race with somebody in the family, and you're the guy I'd like to do this with. And Marco's response was, how do I say no to that? So good for them. I think that's, you know, it's a good family connection, and it gives them a chance to work together. They've probably not done as much of that as you would expect, or time together. And so this will be good for the family.
And Marco needs to say yes, because if he says no, Mario will do it, right? He'll volunteer to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. The other recent series they announced was Michael said that they are planning on entering Mexico's Super Copa series in a partnership with Michelle Jourdain. And in that announcement, Michael said, you know, that he hoped that the presence there might help a little bit more with IndyCar getting a shot to return to Mexico with Pato Award and the success we think he's going to have. So that's noteworthy there. I may table this. I don't know if we'll do this next hour or not, but we'll save this. We'll talk about Ferrari hypercar, but I can't explain. I'm going to get maybe Ryan Marine from Sports Car 365 or somebody on right before Sebring, because I want a full explanation on the difference between hypercar and LMDH, which are both top level prototype classes. And there's convergence, there's not convergence. I play in the sports car world, and I don't fully understand this. So I'm going to see if Ryan can explain this for us a little bit, either tonight or later on, probably in a later date.
Yeah, the hypercar, that's the one that goes invisible on the backstretch. That's what the hypercar does.
But that's definitely what's being planned worldwide for Le Mans, and that's where Ferrari is moving their budget. They confirmed that this week. Instead of coming to IndyCar, they are going to have a factory hypercar program to give them the chance to fight for an overall win at Le Mans, something that I don't think they've done since right before Ford versus Ferrari. 1965 was the last time I think Ferrari won overall at Le Mans. So a story for another time. Got some Formula One nuggets I find interesting. What did we make of Gene Haas's comments about why he's not supporting Romain Grosjean in IndyCar? That's sort of Formula One, sort of not. And we'll get into some news of the day, some things that Kurt has written, and go to your Twitter questions directly next at Kevin Lee 20 at Kurt Cavan, Trackside 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
This is Ed Carpenter, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
It's hour number two from various drivehubler.com studios. Brad is in the official site at the MS Communications Worldwide Headquarters. Kevin Lee, Kurt Cavan in various locations tonight. Thanks for staying with us. Kevin Lee 23 at Kurt Cavan via Twitter on the show tonight. Some Twitter questions, comments. This will lead us to something in the dress when I was talking about some good health news recently. Fleetwood Marky Moose says, I realize this has absolutely nothing to do with Fernando Alonso whatsoever, but it could mean 100% attendance. Just bought our seats 3 nights ago. Let's do this. I think he's joking. And I don't know that we mentioned Fernando in maybe the last 2 weeks show, which kind of breaks a streak because we went, you know, maybe 18 or 19 shows in a row at one point. So apologies. And by the way, we hear things are going well and he's going to be ready for testing after his cycling crash on the road. But it was the news that President Biden announced that we will now have enough vaccine supply for 300 million Americans by the end of May. And essentially the story is that everyone that wants one should be able to have one. And that's a couple of months earlier than what was kind of talked about as recently as a month or so ago. So everyone wants to know, what's that mean for the Indy 500? I know something that's happening at the end of May.
Yeah, May 30th is the date. Roger Penske's been bullish on having it that day. And so all that's left is to announce how much of an attendance figure they're going to have. He's talked about, and Mark Miles have talked about, middle of March giving an answer. But I'm really optimistic, you know, now that they announced 55 and older in the state of Indiana can get the vaccine. I'll be with my wife getting the shot on Friday. So, you know, those are signs, you know, those are steps. And I think, you know, even between the next month, we're going to see another age bracket or two added to the list. So you're going to have, you know, even by the middle of April, you should have everybody north of, you know, 40 years old, you would expect. And that's, let's be honest, that's probably 80-85% of your ticket base is north of 40. So I think that's an exceptional thing. Also, you know, it's kind of just good community service that a round of vaccines will be available at Indianapolis Motor Speedway beginning on Friday, and that'll continue through the weekend and may even be early next week. But a lot of people are going to come to the Speedway and get their shot. And, you know, the other thing is I saw in the media a lot of people mentioned not only that it was that the Speedway was one of the sites, but that they mentioned that May 30th was the race. More chance to talk about the Indy 500, and that was good. You know, we also could see, by the way, what do we have? 89 days until the Indy 500. So you understand that what's happened in the last 89 days, we've made a lot of progress. And I would expect, a pretty healthy contingent on race day. Of course, the news also today seeing that governors, Republican governors in the state of Texas and the state of Mississippi lifting their mask restrictions against the CDC's recommendation, by the way. But lifting those at Texas Motor Speedway for the May 1st and May 2nd races could be a real boost to Eddie Gossage and the ticket selling business the Texas Motor Speedway will be undergoing for those two IndyCar races. So a lot of good news on that front. I think if you ought to be, if you were Roger Penske and Mark Miles, Doug Bowles and the staff at IMS, I think you're going to be able to have good information to make the right decision for having as many fans as possible. You'll be able to make that here in the coming week or week plus.
When does NASCAR race at Texas? This is going to be an interesting dilemma. Are they not there until that All-Star race in early June? Because I don't think they have a spring race. I'm trying to pull it up now. And the reason I ask that is, and this applies to IndyCar as well. So even if the state says, do what you want, for example, if NASCAR was racing at Texas Motor Speedway in April, my guess is that NASCAR would still say, you got to wear a mask because we just can't go under the microscope of not being responsible and have our partners and sponsors deal with any backlash that comes from this. But then you're going to have the push from people in Texas that I remember hearing last year that, yeah, they pretty much stopped the pandemic. They're going about business. And I told you when I was in Alabama, when you wear a mask going into a gas station, they kind of look at you funny. So there are some places, and now we want to see what the numbers are. Maybe the numbers won't change because people are washing their hands and are kind of staying away from each other, and enough people have been vaccinated. But that will be an interesting debate, and hopefully NASCAR doesn't have to deal with that until June. So IndyCar, that All-Star race
is
the only portion in the first half of the schedule. So IndyCar is going to have to make that decision. What do we do? And again, it's still 2 months away. So they don't need to say anything right now. They can make that decision on May 1st and just see where we're at. And maybe we are far enough where they would feel comfortable with their constituents. Keep in mind, they're going to be going somewhere else and dealing with other rules in other states and so forth. So just a sidebar there. And to the end of May situation, that's fantastic news, and it's just one more piece of information that leads me to be optimistic about the 500. Is it going to be all clear? No, I don't think it's going to be all clear because, unfortunately, we just don't know everything. We are pretty sure about some things once you are vaccinated, but we don't know. Can you transmit it to people who decided not to get one? At what point do you need the booster shot? We think it's like the flu shot that it's once a year. So I fear that it's still going to be a little bit cautious, but what the number is, I'm hoping 50, 60, 70%, something like that. And it's a lot closer to normal than we feared a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I think, and I don't have any inside information on this one, but I think if you're talking, I was waiting to see if you were going to say 50, 60, 70,000. But I think if you're talking about a crowd of 125, 130, 140,000 people or more, I think you're going to come away from that thinking that was a really good dip your toes into the water in 2021. I think that seems like that would be a home run. It may be higher than that, but I would, if you were asking me right now on March the 2nd, if the number allowed or the number that showed up was 125,000, I'll take that right now. I think that'd be great. I think it could be better, But given that it's only March 3rd, I'll take that.
Yeah, agreed. I think at least 50% will be allowed. And I say that, think. No one's told me anything. No one's told you anything. And probably even the people that could tell us something, they don't know at this point. Just like what we talked about with Doug, they don't want to – they have a thought, which means more than my thought, but they don't know for certain, and they don't need to know for certain. They'll make that decision when they must make that decision. We just learned something today that we didn't know was coming around the bend, right? That they think everyone is going to have access to this. And I've been saying this all winter when I've been trying to, in all my pessimism, find some reason for optimism, and it's been based on, hey, maybe something happens quicker than we're expecting it to happen. And that's ultimately what it was, that this is going to happen, we think, a couple of months earlier than predicted.
You know, one of the things though, what we are talking about, let's clarify something. I'm not sure either one of us, again, we don't have inside information, because really only Roger Penske knows what, you know, the decision will be. He's going to make the decision, not, you know, those of us in the office and so forth. But I think it's fair to say, you know, what we're talking about here is grandstand capacity. I don't think we're going to put, you know, 30,000 people, you know, in a combined, in a small space or whatever they end up having in a concert, you know, in the middle of the infield, people jam shoulder to shoulder. You know, that may have to wait for 2020. Those concerts, you know, during the race, mm-hmm. The EDM concert, for example. But I think the grandstand's a different story. I think that's a different story. You can create a little space.
I think you can put some circles on the hills too and still get a few thousand people scattered around the grounds.
Yeah. I think it'd be very good.
Yeah.
I have a lot of optimism for it.
Yeah. I'm feeling better about things at this point. Jameen Tuttle from Kentucky says, is curious about the GMR Grand Prix. We've heard discussion about the 500, love sitting in the infield for the weekend and afraid that the race might happen with grandstand only seating. That takes away what makes that event special for me and my sons. Do we know anything about, I haven't asked, are tickets for sale? You know, I mentioned early in the show, I saw that tickets are still for sale. They're not promoting it. They're not advertising it, but I think you could still buy a ticket for the 500 with the understanding that, well, we might have to make some changes at some point. Are tickets available for that race right now?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I suspect you'll hear something. You know, I don't have a date, but they talked about, Doug talked about, I think on the show last week, middle of March. I think, you know, you can do what you need to do in terms of selling tickets in a 2-month window. And I think I would say by two shows from now, I think we'll have all our details.
And his point about sitting in the grass is, I think, the one with the least amount of certainty. I feel confident that I can say anyone that wants to go to the GMR Grand Prix is going to be able to go. I will be shocked if they're not allowing 50,000 people there. And just like, I hope I'm wrong, you know, at some point that event draws more than 50,000 people per day, but it hasn't. So that should be, as many want to come, can come. But as he says, a lot of people like to gather. Those are some of the best spots in the grassy areas. So might be like what Mid-Ohio did and some other places have done. You just draw big circles and, you know, you have people kind of walking around politely saying, hey, can you spread out just a little bit? And there may be a point, again, like Mid-Ohio, if you want to sit in the keyhole on race day, you got to pretty much be there at 8 a.m., right? And put your chair down and stay there. Or somebody in the family does. So it may be kind of the same situation, that it may be first come, first serve, or essentially a grassy area can be sold out. But who knows? If 85% of the population is vaccinated by the time we get to May 14th, maybe it is. Hey, wear your mask, stand as close to each other as you want to. You know, who knows? A lot of things still in play at that point. So we're getting close. We're making progress. Mike J at Tunnelhead 1 says, or asks, is there a scheduled date for the IndyCar Open Test Rookie Orientation at IMS this April? Is there anything other than the April 9th? I'm not aware of that.
So I think they have 2 days blocked.
8th and 9th. And then there's something else in late March that I see on a calendar that I've not really heard mentioned much. That I suppose it's possible it's a road course test. I've just seen it blocked off in the internal calendars that someone is doing a private test at IMS. And we talked about that last week, that anyone can do a private test. And then if anyone else wants to pay and join in, they can. But there was one in late March for IMS. Now, it's also possible that is a series test or an aero test or a Firestone test. So I honestly don't have all the details on that, but I don't know that they necessarily, they haven't had rookie orientation days set aside, because that is going to be the first couple of hours of the first day of practice, right?
Yeah, that's how that's been.
Yeah.
So, no, I wouldn't expect, if 8th and 9th are the dates, I wouldn't expect anything any more than that. I like your reasoning. I like if that late March, that really, it kind of stands to as a reasonable thought that they might be a road course test or a Firestone test.
Yeah. I suspect we'll learn more at the end of the week when we actually see people. And I will be in the bubble. I'm going to get my first COVID test on Thursday morning so that I'm able to be in the area with the drivers. And we're going to separate ourselves. But the drivers will be allowed to take a mask off, and I'll stand 10 feet away. I'm just off camera asking questions. They don't need to see me, and that'll be nice. The drivers can do their photo shoots and the glam shots that we do and use video. Not just us, but everyone does. It's the different tracks for promotions. It's a series, the partners. So that's all coming up this weekend. So I'll get tested on Thursday and Friday, and we'll know. I suspect we've all had it.
Yeah, that's called content day. And so some years we've done it in one day. This year it's a two-day process. And in addition to all the glamour shots and video shoots and so forth that you're speaking of, the drivers will also be meeting with the media on Zoom calls. So mm-hmm. I expect by this time next week, we're going to have a lot of nuggets that were uncovered during content day. And so we'll be able to have talked to all the drivers that are going to participate in the IndyCar series in 2021, at least those that are signed up at the moment who have deals. And so I think we'll have a lot of nuggets to talk about on next week's show.
Andy Amstutz at Stutz Indy 500 says, my ticket order for the GMR Grand Prix was processed, but could be like last year. They process all ticket orders and then decide what's going to happen. I feel confident you're going to have an ability to get in, but you know, maybe it's a grandstand. Who knows? Who knows? All TBD at this point. And what's the word? Not of the day, the week, the month, now, unfortunately, a year. It's fluid, and maybe a second one needs to be flexible. We must remain flexible in all matters. On the Twitterverse?
I think the better word, the Speedway is efforting to get everyone in.
Okay. Yes, definitely. I touched on this a little bit, but Rich specifically asked, when do tickets for Barber and St. Pete go on sale? I would just say stand by. Same thing. Won't shock me that we see something as soon, and I'm not predicting or knowing anything, but it's kind of like any day. We are still 5 weeks away, so we'll just have to wait and see. But as far as I know, they're not available at this point. Great thing about flights right now is, does that extend to April? I know it does through the end of March. You can change all flights, at least on certain airlines.
I think, and I was just talking about this yesterday, I think there's several airlines have said, we're going to go to Southwest policy, and you can change them anytime.
I changed a flight 3 times the last time we tested at Sebring from locations. And that's a nice option to have, where it used to be, it's $150 every time you wanted to do something like that. So that was a good option there. Okay, what else did we want to get to before I get into the longer meat that I have and a couple of debatable topics? Oh, did you see Gene Haas's comments on Romain Grosjean about why he's not supporting him in IndyCar?
I did, and I thought it was kind of lame on Gene's part. His premise was, I just watched my driver, nearly seriously injured, already with burns to his hands, and he thought oval racing was too much for that driver. Not so much for the driver, but for the driver's family that had to endure watching that 2.5, however many seconds it was of real concern. I know it was more than that, but however many seconds he was in a ball of fire. And so I thought that was, I don't know. It was, I'm sure it was heartfelt from Gene. I understand why someone might say that, but you shouldn't, he doesn't need to be speaking for the family. If the family wants him to go IndyCar racing and Roman wants to go IndyCar racing, he should be able to do that without someone essentially criticizing him for that.
I understand where he's coming from. Ultimately, he should have probably kept his mouth shut. And this is where we ask people questions. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. We ask him these questions. Hey, did you consider being a part of that? And he did just answer honestly. And I can see that perspective. You know, his quote was, I just don't want to be part of the bad choice. You know, conversely, people are saying, well, wait a minute, you can't get hurt in Formula One. You can't get hurt in NASCAR. You own teams in both of those respects. But that's probably one of those where being blatantly honest just kind of opens you up for a little bit of criticism on that front. And it may have just been an excuse of, we're losing an awful lot of money in Formula One, and I just don't see losing anymore. You know, you've already said basically we're going to stop trying in Formula One. We can't win. We've got Ferrari. Ferrari is outpaced by Mercedes, so we're just going to ride it out for this year and hope things are better next year. Yeah. And by the way, we're taking only drivers that bring a lot of budget. Because I think Magnussen and Grosjean, I don't know that they brought a whole lot. If anything, they may have been fully hired drivers. And, you know, that now it's changed, that they have to find drivers that can pay the bill. And then there's Daniel Ricciardo, who I like very much. I like his personality, but this didn't really go over well, including with some of the drivers in the IndyCar community. Basically asked, you know, I'd like to do Le Mans. Boy, I don't know about the Indy 500. That scares me just a little bit. I want to be completely honest. And then he said, maybe I'd do it, but would first need a test. But it was the end when he just said, you have to just turn left 4 times a lap. How difficult can that be? I still think he was kidding. That's one of those where I need to have seen him. I think the quote is unfair because I know, you know, Rossi and Kanaan and a lot of other drivers took angst to that. And I would, too, if he was serious, because my answer would be strap in, big boy, and see how easy it is. Did you see your 2-time world champion not make the race a couple of years ago? Tell me how hard it is. But I suspect he was kidding. I choose to believe that, at least.
Yeah, I'm with you. I choose to believe that he said that tongue in cheek. I've said things similar over the last 35 years. I mean, joking around with drivers, all you're doing is turning left. What's the big deal? Yeah. You know, yeah. You can say that in jest, and I think we all understand not only is qualifying for the Indianapolis 500 a pretty daunting feat, but the race itself, much less the race to turn one on lap one. So I think we all get it, and I think Daniel did as well.
All right, we may not have Fernando Alonso news every week, but I think we have Jimmy Johnson news every week. So we'll get to that and more coming up in just a moment. Trackside 93.5 and 107.5, The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
So as I mentioned, Jimmy Johnson will be back in the IndyCar coming up on Monday with Ganassi at Barber. And he's going to be back in a sports car tomorrow at Sebring with Action Express. He had talked about during Daytona that he was hoping that secondary program continued for the Endurance IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship races, and it has been now announced that Action Express will enter a second car. Not a bad lineup, Kurt. It's a seven-time Cup champion, plus Simon Pagenaud. We know him. We know he's pretty good. And Kamui Kobayashi, who had won the Rolex 24 the last 2 years and almost won it again this year. And that team, by the way, finished second in the Rolex 24. So three-driver lineup for Sebring, the six-hour Watkins Glen, and then Petit Le Mans, the 10-hour Road Atlanta.
So Jimmy better think be focused most of his time on his day job, because he's now 46 days from racing at Barber, which I think is the most fascinating thing that I've seen in IndyCar in a long time. Fernando Alonso, that ranks up there at Indy in 2017, but there are not many things that are more interesting and fascinating than a seven-time Cup champion thrown in the middle of these hooligans ready to go racing, because these guys are, you know, they're close in time, they're close in wheel-to-wheel contact on a road course and a street circuit, and obviously the talent level is off the charts. We talk to Scott McLaughlin. I talked to him about what's your realistic expectations? And he said seventh or eighth. And I thought, well, that seems about right in the standings. And then I thought, wait, he's got to beat Scott Dixon, Will Power, Simon Pagenaud, Joseph Newgarden, Alexander Rossi.
Well, he's got to beat one or two or three of them to get to seventh or eighth. Yeah, so there's you can go 10 deep where you're saying, yeah, he's good, he's good, he's good, he's good. You know, you got to beat Graham Rahal or somebody like that to finish that
high. You got to beat Colton Herta. You got to beat Pato O'Ward. You got to beat Felix Rosenquist. I mean, and I'm leaving out somebody. I don't know, you know, you got Hunter Ray as a series champion in there. Not to mention all these, Rinus VK, as you mentioned, Sebastian Bourdais, I think, is going to have a really strong season for where that car has been in recent years. And oh, by the
Hinchcliffe,
way, that it just goes on and on. And that's Scott McLaughlin, who's got a Penske. So anyway, it's Jimmy's got 46 days to figure it out, because it's going to come fast and furious.
You know, one of the theories, I think I've mentioned this on the air before, that's out there is that, one, he's just doing what he wants to do. He's having fun. This is what he wanted to do when he was a kid. And he has very realistic expectations. You know, he knows he's going to struggle at it. But from a competition standpoint, he's thinking about sports cars. And one of the ideas is that Indy cars will help prepare you for prototype sports cars. There's not a lot of track time in sports cars. We think there's not a lot of on-track time in IndyCar. Cut that to down to a fifth of that, you know, because you're sharing the car with people. You get very few laps at the Rolex 24 or at Sebring, or even in a typical weekend if you were running full-time with one other teammate. There's not a lot of testing. And they're similar enough that, all right, you take your lumps, but then you're going to be better for it. And I'm telling you, he's already competent in a sports car. In the prototype, in the top class, I looked at the lap times during the Rolex. He was running mid-pack, and this is an all-pro class. These are all-pro drivers that we all know who they are. And I think there's a chance, and I would think in his mind, he's thinking, all right, I'm going to do IndyCar because it's fun, but I'm probably not going to have any success. Sports cars are also fun, but I can win. I can win in sports cars and not just be the guy filling out the roster. I can actually be pretty much as close as our A driver or close to it. So that's a theory out there. And that's why he's really wanted to do all four of these sports car races, because that's his plan after he does IndyCar for a couple of years, that he wants to do Le Mans and do a full-time either WEC or IMSA schedule.
Well, I think that's admirable. And I think that's fascinating as well. But, you know, as much as I like and have such tremendous respect for Jimmy, and I know you do and all of our listeners have respect for what he's accomplished, I don't want to see him running 18th, 19th, and 20th for example, in IndyCar races, when three or four cars drop out of a race because of contact or a mechanical issue of some kind, I want to see him battling with someone. And it won't surprise me if that first race, if he's chasing the field, because
yes,
everybody's going to be on it.
And that's going to be the great question, is we know this guy's skill set and his level. And I think most of us think if he would have done this when he was 28 years old or 25 years old, you know, he'd be like Scott McLaughlin, and he would legitimately be talking about seventh or eighth. So if he can do this at 45, when not many other people are doing this at this age on road and street courses, then that is going to just simply be amazing. So he is graded on a curve. Be faster than anyone, it is a major accomplishment. And I still will appreciate if Jimmy Johnson is running 18th or 19th, because that means he beat somebody. Beating anyone that's been doing this for at least the last 10 years, which is the case for everybody but McLaughlin, is going to be really significant. And the key is, in the NASCAR world, is he wearing boot-cut suits or not? Did you see about this? The NASCAR people can't understand the ankle-cut suit compared to the boot-cut NASCAR style, and somebody found a picture of Elio. They found an example of that, and I remember that. When he did the Arrow McLaren race last year, in fact, that's the first thing that I said to him, and I'm sure everybody did. When I walked up to him, and it just stood out that here's an IndyCar driver wearing a boot-cut fire suit, and I looked down, and he was like, I know, they got it wrong. They got it wrong. It's terrible. I hate it. So that wasn't a choice. It's not only the preferred style, but you don't want the loose cuff to potentially get caught in a pedal or anything else like that. So, but that's been kind of making the rounds in the NASCAR world this particular week. There were stock cars, cup cars, I think three of them at COTA today, and they're about to finish the lap.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Yeah, that was pretty. That's pretty good on your part.
It'll be entertaining. You know, I know that they're going to be. In fairness, Formula One fans would say the same thing about IndyCar, right? You know, people wanted to talk about their 6 seconds slower and so forth. Doesn't matter what the speed; it's the competition level. And I think NASCAR will put on a pretty good race there. I'm curious to see it.
I want to see if they stay within the boundaries there on that next to last corner, because. They're going to be sliding and pushing and shoving, and they're going to be outside the track boundaries. I can't imagine the cup cars make that corner, when they come through there in a pack. Not everybody's making that corner. There's too much runoff room in there. Mm-hmm. And anybody using that porta potty over there, like we saw in the IndyCar practice, who hit that? It was that Graham that hit that? Somebody hit it anyway. It created an interesting moment for whoever jumped out of the porta potty.
So there are no rules against blocking or basically crashing someone. Surely there are no track limit rules for NASCAR, right? They're going to be able to go wherever they want to go. Anywhere within the state of Texas is fair grounds. Do they have track limits at Watkins Glen or anywhere else? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so. But, there's not as much runoff room as there is.
Which,
in that
by the
corner.
Way, some people argue there shouldn't be track limits. If you can somehow make it work, you go. If you don't want them to go there, you need to put up a barrier and keep them from going there. So I don't
know. Well, the purist would like to have had IndyCar stay in the track limits of that corner in particular, whatever that number is, 17, 16, whatever it is.
Just jumping around, I've got a few other things I want to get to. I don't think we've mentioned this yet, is that there are reports today that Le Mans may be moved to August. It was set for, I think, Detroit weekend, weekend in June.
Yes, Detroit weekend on the 12th and 13th. I read it. Marshall Pruitt had a story talking about the 21st and 22nd of August, which would, again, preclude IndyCar competitors from competing. That's Gateway Weekend. So
Well, more so, there's an IMSA race that weekend. So the reason that the Detroit IMSA race was split, one of the reasons, I think, from the IndyCar event was because some in that paddock needed to get to Le Mans, whether it be drivers, teams, whatever. So that's why IMSA was the week before. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that if that does happen, that the IMSA race now moves in and is in tandem with IndyCar. I haven't seen that officially yet, but I've wondered about that. And I think maybe Marshall alluded to that in that story as well. But VIR is that weekend that they're talking about. So maybe IMSA can move that event around. That would be one of the concerns for that. But the idea would be is that, well, we could actually have fans. And if it's a matter of no fans to some fans, I understand that. So some would say, well, wait a minute, is the Indy 500 in danger of being moved? No, I think they're in a different place. From what I understand, we in America are, generally speaking, much further ahead as far as vaccinations than most other countries. Certainly, we talked about Canada, way ahead of where Canada is, which puts Toronto in jeopardy at this point. You know, if it was a matter of no fans coming to the 500, then I think that could potentially be in play. If you had enough confidence, it would be different again a couple of months later. And I think there's reason in France to think that might be the case. So we will keep an eye on that moving forward. I saw Robin Miller wrote on racer.com that someone that most of us in the paddock know, I'm not sure if the general fan does, but hardcore fans would, Poppy, Dave Popolars, who's been around Andretti for a long time, filling a lot of different roles and worked with several other teams before that. He's kind of got his dream job now, moving over to IMS.
Yeah, he's going to be leading the restoration shop, which restores a lot of the iconic cars. That, you know, those cars, while they run on race day in the morning during the parade, you know, they do some ceremonial laps and so forth, they still require attention. And so he'll be heading that up. Really a prestigious situation for Poppy. Such a great guy. He's one of the really nice guys. I would add, by the way, switching subjects just a little bit, Jeff Gordon is going to be on the IMS Hall of Fame Zoomcast tomorrow night at 6:30. If you want to jump in and listen to Jeff, I know a lot of the certainly Central Indiana fans do. Go to the IMS Hall of Fame's website, get signed up. They're taking, I think, 500 people can be in that Zoomcast, and they've been doing a series of these over the last couple months, and Jeff will be a great guest. And obviously so classy and a joy to listen to and has such great perspective, not only on the facility, but motor racing in general. And I'm sure he'll talk about Jimmy and his pursuit in the IndyCar world. I'm sure that'll be a topic of discussion.
I think Jeff's a little bit jealous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. He understands why. And it takes the right kind of person at that age. You know, Jeff, I will be really interested in his comments. Would you have been willing to go through the pains that that's going to be? It takes a strong man who's, again, won 80-some races and 7 championships to look at the timing chart and be last. And that's just going to be part of it.
Yeah. I don't think Jeff, and I know Jeff extremely well, he would probably never call it a regret that he didn't get to run IndyCar, because things worked out for him. But I think he would have liked the environment to have allowed for what Jimmy is getting to do. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, 8 years ago, people's eyes weren't open to something like this happening. Not right or wrong. It just wasn't what Jeff was pointed toward. I think had Jimmy done it first and Jeff was where he was 5 or 6 years ago, I think he might have tried it.
I didn't mention this on the show last week, but it's noteworthy that Goodyear is buying Cooper Tire for $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
So Goodyear wants to either get into road racing more, or it's just branding, you know. And so essentially, this means Goodyear and Firestone are going to be on the same track on the same weekends, sort of, from a branding standpoint. The Cooper Tire is a very successful and established brand, so I wouldn't think there's going to be any change in that. But just noteworthy, you know, that Cooper Tire is a key critical partner of the road to Indy of all three steps leading up to IndyCar. And the rubber works pretty well. I wouldn't think they'd change that, but just something to kind of make a note of as you move forward. And hopefully that now there are new bosses, and the new bosses hopefully allow Cooper Tire to continue to support the road to Indy the way they have been, because that's critical.
Yeah, it's been a valuable partnership for Dan Anderson's group, and the road to Indy's obviously been very successful.
And speaking of the road to Indy, we've seen some pictures, and I should know about this with a driver in the road to Indy, but I had forgotten that the Halo is coming to Indy Lights. And I think they either tested at Laguna Seca today or maybe testing tomorrow, kind of on the heels of the IndyCar test. So Marshall took a snapshot of a car that was in the paddock, but they've got the full European-style Halo on the Indy Lights cars this year. The USF 2000 and Indy Pro 2000 cars have the AFP type frontal protection device that IndyCar had right before the aero screen a couple of years ago. So that's exciting to me. That's exciting. I know it doesn't have the best aesthetic look, but it sure seems a lot safer to me.
Yeah. And I certainly can appreciate that from a parent's point of view.
I feel that way. Even if I just feel that way. And maybe it's because we know people involved. Now, different people have different opinions on this. Some can know everyone, and they just, nope, this is part of it. Everyone chooses it. We understand the risks. I have gone the other direction. If you can make something safer, I can get used to the way things look, and this is still the coolest-looking race car, generally speaking, a formula car that there is. Whether you put an aero screen, a halo, whatever the case may be, it's still a good-looking race car. So that'll be something to watch for this season. We're going to table our discussion about who we think the next first-time winner is going to be until next week, because you know what? There's no race between now and then as far as IndyCar is concerned. So we'll be able to break that down next week, all right?
Sounds good.
All right, I'll see what we missed coming up in just a moment. Stick with us. It's Trackside, 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan. I missed this question. Apologies, Perry, from... take off my glasses. Blue Onyx 500. Any talk of the fastest seat in sports being revived? I think if my guess is, and I don't know anything, but I assume it will run. It may just have different branding this year. This is a very important part of IndyCar, in my opinion. And I think it's a successful business as well. But some things have changed with Honda. Maybe Honda returns. Who knows? And certainly the pandemic has impacted things. But hopefully health and safety allows it to go, and I will be surprised if the fastest seat in sports, the two-seater, is not involved at IndyCar events. Okay, I think we've covered most everything. We'll try again next week and talk more. I've got college basketball this weekend. We'll see if it's like riding a bike. I haven't called a game since right before the pandemic last year, so I'll give it a go in the Ohio Valley Conference Championship for Westwood One on some of your favorite radio stations and satellite radio and tune in and so forth. Saturday night from Evansville with Teams TBD. We'll find out. We'll talk to you next Tuesday night at 7 here on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.